The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, Dr. Ray. How are you?
I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Why do I have to be the insightful professional?
You just patted yourself on the back.
I'm losing you, buddy. I don't know what you're trying to say.
You're just so great. I love your show.
Am I close?
No.
Does that comfort you?
No.
I'm sorry, and I'm going to confess it, because I'm a holy guy.
I'm a little intimidated to talk to you because you used a lot of big words.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
You came to the wrong place. You came to the wrong place if you're looking for deep answers.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
You know, I try not to be offended by that caller's a little intimidated because you used a lot of big words. One of the things I try to do on this program, and I do it every day, is I eschew obfuscation. I palaver pellucidity. I do. So I don't know where she's coming from, accusing me of being sometimes mellifluous with no evidence of catachresis. Sheesh. Good to have you with me, Dr. Ray Guarendi. This is Look Back Friday. Got the call sitting up there. Chris, anonymous. A lot more people are being anonymous these days. I'm going to start being anonymous. I'm going to say, thank you for calling me. I'm not telling you who I am, but I'm in North Canton, Ohio. Okay, we'll get to that momentarily. My daughter, she was the oldest, and she, kindergarten, first day of kindergarten, she's very frustrated. Came home, I said, hey, Annie, how's things? She said, I don't like school, I'm wasting my time. Well, how's that? She said, I can't read, I can't write, and they won't let me talk. Said, well, good point. Good point, Hanny. Going to the other end, and I'm just kind of free associating, one of my favorite columnists is a gentleman, and I'm sitting here going, favorite, Thomas Sowell. Brilliant man. I think Sowell's pushing 90 now. And he has thoughts on the passing scene. And when he would write a column every so often, he would give two or three sentence observations about society, people, morality, the culture. So I want to do a little bit of that before I go into my opening monologue. My wife, way back in the beginning of our marriage, was a social worker at a nursing home. And I would begin to, I'd visit her there. Well, actually, no. Was it the beginning of our marriage? Yeah. She was at the nursing home when we got married. I would go visit her, and sometimes I'd go around and visit with the residents. There was this one woman. She looked, I couldn't gauge her age. She was probably 70 pounds, curled in a fetal position on her bed. Oh, I would say very, very close to death. Very close. So she was just so weak she was unable to move. Looked like she was sleeping, floating in and out of consciousness. Couldn't tell her age because it was hard. It was hard to say. Obviously 90 plus. I went in. I forget what drew me to the room, but there was a picture on her nightstand of an absolutely drop dead gorgeous woman. Looked to be about 30-ish. Nurse's aide came in and I said, wow, that picture, that woman's just beautiful. I said, is that her granddaughter, or is that one of her great nieces? She said, no, that was her. And I looked at this torqued body in her bed with nothing whatsoever that would indicate beauty. And it is so easy to look at where someone is at the immediate moment and forget that they were someone young, someone vibrant, vigorous, someone perhaps extremely competent in their particular area, perhaps very handsome, very beautiful, very athletic. And then toward the end of life, you see them in the context of severe aging, where their body pretty much is letting them down every which way. And you just see them at that moment, and you just think, kind of unconsciously, that's who they always were. That hit me. That really hit me hard to see that. And I think about that a lot when I see an old person. And I try to think to myself, they had a life. They were a young mother once, or a young father. They had children they raised. It's interesting because when my wife and I used to troop into church with our 10 children, and at one point they were all 12 and under, so we were quite a spectacle. You couldn't not see us. We just sort of came in and we took up a whole pew. It's hard finding a full pew. One thing bad about having that many kids that age in a pew is there's only two adults to try to sit between and head off any potential problems. You can't put an adult between every two children. And we'd look at some of the older people in the congregation, and we'd see just them. The guy, his wife, maybe looking like their children were all raised. They were the age of having their children gone. And my wife said to me the other day, as we sat in church, just she and I, Ray, we became those folks we used to see and wonder if they had children, wonder what their family life was like, because all we saw was two people, middle age or older, sitting together at Mass. And now she and I sit together at Mass. Our children are grown. And we are the ones that the young families look at and say, yeah, there's an older couple in there sitting in Mass. And there's a part of me that wants to say, yeah, but I wasn't always this age. We would come in here with 10 kids. And that always reminds me to consider the whole of someone's life when I see them, especially people who have lived their lives. They're retired, or they're not physically what they used to be, or you watch them walking somewhere and they walk ever so slowly, and their gait looks like it's incredibly labored, how hard it is for them to walk, and you wonder, and you're thinking to yourself, come on, I'm going to pass you up here. And I tell myself, they were at one point, perhaps, far more athletic than I was. Far more competent in so many areas. They had talents. They had a vibrant life. I have to keep telling myself that, because I just don't want to look at someone and say, okay, I see him at this moment, and I unconsciously extrapolate that this is how they've always been. That's just not true. And it helps me. It helps me to respect them and the fullness of the life that they had. I'm Dr. Ray.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling, 40 years of experience, 17,000 current students, pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plan, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right, pretty much everything. My wife and I use Seton, some of our children. I'll tell you this, two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT. Over 30% higher on English and reading on the ACT. It's a rigorous program. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to SetonHome.org. That is SetonHome.org.
Those who deny the full humanity of the preborn will be toying with the sentiments of pro-life people. They will say, you can't really believe in the humanity of the unborn unless you support this or that piece of legislation. The pro-life position is quite different. We might well believe that we need to improve social conditions. But first of all, we believe that the preborn are a good to be protected, even if born into poverty, even if born into unstable, violent homes. We want to eliminate those terrible conditions, but it is the height of arrogance to tell human beings like unborn children who cannot communicate or reason or stand up for themselves that they are better off dead, because we know from our own experience that we would choose life and survival over death, no matter how poor our social environment.
Cresta in the Afternoon, weekdays at 4 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
I don't want to talk about it.
You don't want to talk about it? Then why did you bring it up in the first place?
You know when you're sitting on a chair and you lean back so you're just on two legs? And you got in trouble for doing that, you know, when you were a kid. You know, sit up, no, put the chair up. And I do that now. I lean back on two legs. And then there's still people who comment on that and say, don't do that. And it's usually the ladies. We guys, we take these risks. Then I lean too far and I almost fall over, but I catch myself. Just at the last second, I catch myself and I throw myself forward. Well, that's how I'm feeling a lot of the time these days. Same type of feeling. It's Dr. Abe. Okay, so we're going to get to a previous call we had. I don't know how far back this call was. On average, they're about 2 months back. This is a call from an anonymous dad from Ohio. He has a son in his early 20s living with them. And, well, I don't know if he's paying rent. I don't know if, in fact, he's out of the basement. I really don't know how cooperative he is until I listen.
Well, he's in his young 20s. He's been working a bridge job since he graduated from college. He's, a very smart, very strong-willed, quick thinker. He's pretty respectful of mom, but not too much of me. And he gives and he takes all our food from home and he eats it and stuff like that. We give him everything, but he doesn't give a whole lot back. And I'm just trying to figure out, I've been advised that I should ask him to pay rent or to move out of the house. And that will help him to grow up, help him to respect us more because of all that we do for him. And if I try to correct him or give him a suggestion, then he rebels. So I'm trying to figure out if I should ask him to leave the home or to pay rent, or what I'm doing right now and just let him go and don't ask him any questions about his life or anything like that, which he seems happy about.
Two questions, sir. Who advised you to, in essence, say, okay, rent or go? Who advised you to do that?
His brother, who he went through the teenage years and he wasn't very open to us or anything like that. And then he moved out of the house. And then when he was 20 years old, he called me up one day and started asking me questions. And our relationship's been great since then. And he realized how smart mom and dad were, and he appreciated that, and he wanted some of that advice. But his brother says, this guy, he's not there yet. He doesn't realize how smart you and mom are and how you could help him and stuff like that.
Do you think he will be smart as long as he continues to live in your home?
I don't think he's smart right now. I mean, he procrastinates. He's not getting ahead with his life. He hasn't gotten a job in his field.
Well, he doesn't have any expenses.
And he has very few expenses. Right. Yeah, I did make him pay for his car, and he pays for his gas, but he eats food at home. He doesn't really help out a whole lot.
How old is he?
You know, so
how old is he?
He's in his young 20s.
Now, you asked an interesting question. You said, I want to know if I should. Now, how would you define that? Should meaning that would be a good move, or should, do I have the right?
No, I meant, would it be good for him? Would it be good for him? Because I've got all kinds of great advice I could give him, but he just won't accept any of it right now.
You said something.
He doesn't want anything from me.
You said something a little earlier, and I kind of just let it slip by, but you said he doesn't treat you very well.
No. Hmm.
So let me see if I got this right.
No.
He lives at your place pretty much for free. He does as he pleases. He's not cooperative. He's not helpful. He's disrespectful to you. He shows no signs of really moving ahead. He's drifting. Is there any more to throw into that picture?
Well, he knows he needs to find a job in his field or go back to school. And he is moving along that direction. He's supposedly been looking for jobs, and I believe him. And he's even told his work that, hey, when I find a job in my field, I'll be leaving.
Does that mean he'll be leaving your house?
Yeah, I think he's said that when he gets a real job, then he'll be leaving. I think he's said that. Hmm.
You didn't mention your wife in this. What does she think about him living there under these conditions?
She loves to have him close by.
Okay. So there's one of your problems. You're not in agreement on what to do about this, correct?
Yeah. She wouldn't want me asking him to pay. She sees some value in it, but she doesn't want to push him and push him away, you know, inappropriately.
So
she wants to try to maintain the relationship.
What are you asking of me, sir? Are you saying, how do I make my wife understand? Are you saying, how do I make my husband understand, or son understand? Are you saying, do I have the right as a parent to do this? What are you looking toward?
For his betterment, should I push him more? Should I ask him to pay rent? Should I ask him to pay some of the household bills? Should I ask him to go out and buy groceries for us?
I don't know your son specifically. I don't know your circumstances specifically. So for me to say, yes, it would be better for him if you did this, I can't say that. What I can say is, if you're asking me generically, is it better to require some responsibility from a young adult who is taking advantage of your living situation? Is it better for them? Yes, it is. Because what happens is, the longer it goes on, they generally don't become more responsible. They become comfortable in the living situation. Personally, and I don't know, I can't predict this, but I would have my own question marks that even if he got another job, he would move out, because he's got a pretty good. Where else is he going to live like this? But I think, you know, every parent has the right to say, these are my terms. This is the young adult. Did you notice very, very early in the call, and I really hesitate to use this language, I hate the language, but Dad uttered a trigger word. I'm trained to listen to every word. He said his son is strong-willed. Now, typically people use that description for kids, little kids. 21-year-old, strong-willed is code word for he's not cooperative. He's stubborn. He wants to do it his way. He doesn't want to be told anything. Certainly doesn't want to be required to do anything he doesn't want to do. So comes under the umbrella strong-willed. Now, obviously, at the time of the call, I didn't want to go off on that tangent and say, wait a minute, why are you describing him so strong-willed? I figured Dad would get to it as he gave the description of what the current circumstances are. Mom is reluctant. Now, why would mom be reluctant? The biggest reluctance for many parents is fear. If we take a stand and set conditions, and he leaves, what will happen? Where will he go? Will he be safe? Who will he live with? Can he make it? Will he move in with his girlfriend if he has one? I couldn't live with myself if something didn't go wrong, something didn't go right with him moving out. That's usually the number one motive. Now, Dad said something interesting. He said, he's disrespectful to me, not to his mother. Probably because she doesn't ask anything of him. She just supports him being there. She loves him being there. And she probably not only makes any demands of him, but she's probably enabling him pretty heavily. So Dad is trying, although he has no leverage at this point, but he's trying. He's talking with his son to try to get him to be more cooperative. And that typically brings out the disrespect. If you have one parent saying, it's okay, I love you here, I'm not going to ever ask you to leave because you could hurt yourself, and you got the other parent saying, wait a minute, you're not 14, you're in your 20s, what are we going to do about this? The least I could do is charge your rent. But Dad's not even sure he can do that because his wife would resist it. And again, if this were therapy, we could explore their marriage, find out exactly all along what has been their child-rearing approach. It's not likely that mom was the disciplinarian and now she's not. It's likely that she was always a bit on the permissive side with this kid. He is now 20-something and he's uncooperative and unpleasant. I don't suspect that he was easy to get along with when he was 16, but for whatever the reason, there were probably differences between mom and dad and how to approach this child, and they continue. Now, this is all stuff you explore in therapy. I mean, you can't explore it on a radio show. This is just more or less to educate. Something else here, too. Dad was saying, in essence, do I have the right to ask him to be cooperative? Do I have the right to raise the rent? Do I have the right to have him get food? Well, sure you do. But it would be interesting to see how he reacts to all this, because he knows his mom's on his side. So he can resist Dad, and his attitude could easily be, what are you going to do about it? I don't have the money to buy food. Well, you would if you didn't play so many video games. You would if you didn't buy the latest thing. You would if you didn't constantly have this for entertainment. You could say that. But again, if mom's on his side. So what does Dad do? Well, oftentimes I advise parents, if you are paralyzed, for whatever the reason, because of fear, because of marital disagreement with the child, then your best move is to say nothing. Because every time you try to guide, there's a fight. You have no leverage. So it's more or less, I'm going to try to convince you to see it a little differently, a little more maturely, and you're going to fight me, and you're going to argue with me, and then we're going to end up angry at each other, and it's going to get ugly, and you're going to feel like I'm unfair because you don't see yourself very well. And the spouse may say, why are you on him all the time? So really, the least bad option is to shut up. Now, that's a bad option, but it may be the least bad. I don't know why the child wants to leave. Young adult wants to leave when he gets a job. I don't know why. He's got a good there. Mom probably does all kinds of stuff for him. Why would he leave? I don't know. Maybe he's just buying time to get Dad off his back. Look, I'm going to leave, so just leave me alone. I would be suspect about that. So, typically what happens in these cases is that as time goes on, the relationships deteriorate. They get uglier. And then a parent or two makes a more definitive move.
60 on 10 with Monsignor Charles Pope.
The fifth commandment, you shall not kill. At the heart of this commandment is an absolute insistence on the sacredness of human life. We read in Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 5, Before I ever formed you in the womb, I knew you, says the Lord. So every human life is sacred because it's caught up in the mind and the heart and the will and the love of God. And no matter how we're conceived or any circumstances, God has always known and loved every human person. And for this reason, we are to hold sacred every human life. We are, therefore, to never murder, never kill, never seek vengeance. Of course, we have issues of abortion and euthanasia today, and we have so many ways where we in some way disrespect the lives of other human persons, and even our own life. We have to learn to respect it as a great gift from God. The fifth commandment, you shall not kill.
For more about the Ten Commandments, visit EWTNRC.com.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
John 14. This is Jesus in the upper room with the disciples before he's going out to his sacrifice of himself for our salvation. And Philip says to the Lord, Show us the Father, and we'll be satisfied. Jesus looks at Philip and says, Philip, have I been with you all this time? Don't you understand? When you see me, you're looking at the Father. In fact, only two people throughout human history have given rise to the question, not who is he, but what is he? The two people are Buddha and Jesus. Buddha's answer was, don't come to me, don't look to me, look to my doctrine, look to what I teach. Jesus's answer was, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble of heart. Jesus is explicitly claiming to be God.
Hi, Dr. Ray. You're still my favorite program on all media.
Thank you for joining me, Dr. Ray Guarendi. This show the doctor is in rated PG-13. Psychological grandstanding at a 13-year-old level. Pretty high for us guys. Have you ever noticed, remember all those vague photos of Sasquatch, the Yeti, UFOs, all that? You ever notice that? Now that everybody has a phone with video recording ability, you know, see, you should be seeing that a lot more, shouldn't you? No matter what happens, you should have your phone with you. Most people do, and you could take a picture of all this stuff. How come we're seeing less and less of it? Just saying. This is Look Back Friday on The Doctor Is In. Take previous calls, and I get to expand and talk more. Yep, it's one of the great benefits of the program. I just get to talk, get paid for it. Been trying to get EWTN to pay me by the word. They're resistant, them and Abe, they think they're going to pay me by the show, so there's really no real motive to use more words. Let's go to, look at that clock. Yeah, let's go to Chris from Missouri. An interesting question regarding addiction.
My question is it true that we are powerless to overcome an addiction? I'll be specific. Say alcohol or a sexual addiction. I know there's some debate as to whether sexual addiction's a thing. But is it true that we are powerless to overcome it on our own? Now, I'm not saying that counseling isn't helpful, or that 12-step isn't helpful. I go to a 12-step meeting every week. It's Sexaholics Anonymous, I'll be honest. And it's helpful insofar as it offers me the accountability that is helping me to reach the sobriety. But just the idea that, first of all, I guess I don't, maybe because I'm a guy or it's just the way I am, but I don't take too well when people tell me I'm powerless over something. Maybe it's true, I don't know, but I just have a very difficult time understanding that, and I, even people say you're completely powerless But they'll even get specific and say, you cannot do this without counseling. It's like, well, I can't always afford counseling. That's just the way it is right now. But I don't know, because what if you, for whatever reason, you don't have those resources? You know, when COVID was around, I was not able to attend meetings, 12-step meetings. So I don't know. Just wondering what you think of that notion that it's impossible to do it on your own.
I'm reading between the lines, and one of your questions is, I don't like, well, it's not a question, it's a statement. I don't like the implication that I am powerless over my own life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's true. Many people don't. Years ago, I was talking to a mentor psychologist of mine, and he told me about a review of weight loss, diet programs, exercise programs, etc. And they wanted to find out what was the best, what was the best predictor, and they said they called it, no, this is a dirty word, and oh boy, we're not allowed to use this word anymore. They called it will. Mm-hmm. I cited a study where my mentor psychologist said that they found that the common denominator in people losing weight and getting in shape was will. They wanted to. I saw another study that said the number one reason for quitting smoking. Now, nicotine is an incredibly addicting substance. It really is. Much more addicting than people knew. The number one reason, the number one way that they quit. What do you think it was, Chris?
Like willpower or cold turkey?
They quit. Yep, they quit. Now, I'm not saying, you put it well. These are helpful tools. And, you know, you can get so addicted that, in fact, you are pretty close to powerless over your body. I mean, you get some of these drugs, and you've used them. They grab you, and they paralyze you, and they suffocate you, and they choke you by the throat. There's no question about that. I am not minimizing that. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But there is a continuum in terms of, you know, the Alcoholics Anonymous is probably the number one most successful intervention for alcoholics.
Mm-hmm.
Second only to, you want to guess at the other one?
I'm not too familiar with them.
Okay. I quit drinking because it's ruining my life and the lives of those I love.
Oh, it's rock bottom sort of thing.
Yep. Now, again, I'm not saying that's for everybody. But what I am saying is, at a certain level of what is called addictions, or a certain level of what is called oppression, or a certain level of what is called obsession, preoccupation, all the words you could use. Yes, there is a certain willfulness that can be applied. Part of the problem here is the word addiction. Like so much of the English language, especially in the area of mental health and counseling and social relations and the stuff of people, the words become broader. In the strictest sense, addiction has three aspects to it. Craving, tolerance, withdrawal. That's the strictest definition of addiction. So to say someone is, for example, addicted to a video game, addicted to gambling, even addicted to pornography, this is not to say the attraction can be so powerful, and it can have physiological components. But it is not, for example, a narcotic that one has gotten used to and will severely respond when they are forced to get off the drug. Their body craves it. Their body physiologically has to have it. So what we've done is we've taken addiction and we've broadened it out. Broadened it out to umbrella term, pretty much anything that has a formidable presence in our lives and it affects other parts of our lives. You know, I play softball a lot. And when I was younger, I played with guys that played five nights a week, six nights a week, tournaments. They just played. They had to play constantly. Were they addicted? I've seen people that are so caught up in running, for example, that if they don't run, they almost have a psychological sort of withdrawal that they haven't run for 2 days because their schedule didn't permit it. It really, really sets them on edge. Or guys that lift, you know, bodybuilders, if they're forced to not bodybuild, to not go to that gym, they have not the least a psychological reaction, and some would even argue a physical one. However, to the degree that the stuff isn't actually co-opting their neurological structure, they do have a heavy component of will, desire, determination, resolve to alter anything that they see is controlling their lives to the exclusion of other things.
Hello, friends, and welcome to another segment of The Crux of the Matter. I'm Father Wade Menezes. Today I'd like to discuss why it is wrong for a man and woman to live together before marriage. There's an old wise maxim that states, the breaking of the rules before marriage will naturally lead to the breaking of the rules after marriage. It has also been said that fornication before marriage will likely lead to adultery after marriage. But what if the couple is living chastely? What if the couple is not having premarital relations? Let's say they're living together chastely for the sake of cutting down on expenses, for the consolidating of bills, and that they're planning on getting married in the near future. Is it still a good idea for them to live together before marriage without the benefits of the marriage covenant? The answer is simply, no, it is not. And this answer makes good, logical sense. As faithful Catholics, we already know that the sin of fornication, that is, sexual relations before marriage, is displeasing to Almighty God. And if done with full knowledge and deliberate consent, it is a mortal sin. And what about all of the beautiful mystery that the marriage covenant brings with itself? If such mysteries, both the sexual and the non-sexual, are discovered before marriage, then the couple begins their covenantal union with no foundation on which to build its success. The old adage, familiarity breeds contempt, comes to mind here. Lastly, friends, why would someone take the risk of putting himself or herself in the near occasion of sin? Remember, as Catholics, we know that we're called not only to avoid sin directly, but we are also called to avoid what's called the near occasion of sin, those persons, places, or things that can lead us to sin. Living together does just that. To move in together is simply not a wise move at all. And that's the crux of the matter. God bless you, and thank you for joining us.
Doesn't that sound like one of those cop show things? Rockford Files, Magnum PI, always very manly kind of names, you know? That big flurry of the PIs, private investigators, the old former detectives, except Monk. Monk is not a name that would fit with Rockford. Magnum PI. Monk? I like Columbo, though. That's kind of the bridge name. This is Look Back Friday. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. Program Doctor is in Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. This version here on Fridays is where we take previous calls from previous programs, to be redundant. Superfluous pleonasm there. And just as an aside, I had a Latin teacher, Mr. Rometta. And Rometta was a verbal genius. And I said, Mr. Rometta, I need a better word for redundancy. He said, pleonasm. It's rolled right off his tongue. And I'll never forget that. I never looked up pleonasm. I just know it's redundancy. And he would say, superfluous pleonasm. Anyway, to be redundant, these previous calls from previous shows are now with me, and we play them. And I get a chance to indeed comment more. Or go off in a different direction, or embellish and extrapolate. Because I last call talked a little bit about addictions and how that's a very broad umbrella term now. Okay, this one is Marie's calling from Ohio. Got an adult son. And the COVID response the last 2.5 years has brought out in him, well, I said this in one of my monologues. I said there's going to be a certain percentage of the population that are going to be permanent germaphobes. They will no longer be at peace in a crowd. A small percentage of them will have anxiety disorders, reactions to being in crowded places for fear of breathing air that somebody else has breathed. So let's see what Marie has to say about her son.
So my son graduated from nursing school during the whole COVID epidemic, and he took a job working in the hospital, and just his fear of germs just has increased and increased, you know, I guess partly from pathology and his classes when he was in school. And he's had to quit his job now because of the fear of germs. He can't even work, and, you know, he will leave the house, but, you know, he worries about germs when he leaves the house. And, you know, and if he goes out to dinner, like, you know, watching the server's hands, and what do the server's hands have cuts on them? And, you know, and just constant, you know, or abrasions and washing hands like over and over again till his skin is raw. So I as a parent, like, how is supporting versus how is, you know, not, how, I don't know, tolerating on how to say it. You know, I want to be the best support, and I don't want to be too lenient, and I don't want to be too strict on it, and, you know, and he's an adult, of course, so can you help me?
I'm not sure I can, Marie. See, I think what you're witnessing is the end product of 2 years of assault, 2 years of information that's not been balanced at all, a la look at the recent Omicron scare. I guess what I do, if he were my son and he's willing to talk about it, I'd probably ask him, so when do you think, if ever, you'll be over this? And how will you get over it? And why weren't you afraid of it 2 years ago?
Okay.
Is he any kind of faith-filled individual?
Very, very faith-filled.
Well, then I would ask him, what is this that you are so fearful? God has said, be not afraid. And then you've just kind of got this, he's got this, what it sounds like, a terribly emotional reaction, not rational at all.
No.
To all of this, and I think you got to maybe explore with him where it's coming from. Why? How does this tie into his faith as a person of God? Explaining to him that, if it makes any difference. See, I always get nervous about trying to use reason with people who are just emotionally paralyzed. But explaining to him that he's healthy, God gave him an immune system which fights off all kinds of germs. We live in a sea of germs, but our bodies are this incredibly well-designed gift that fight this off. If nothing else, Marie, maybe he'll go to therapy. Because
yeah,
he's thinking so many irrational
things.
He's
totally open to that. And he went to somebody, and actually his therapist said, yeah, I used to have a fear of germs too, you know, but didn't really address it. Just kind of said, let's just get into a routine and stuff. It wasn't really, like, I've heard of things where they, like, whatever, maybe make you touch the toilet or something like that, or I don't know. Is that kind of therapy good?
Well, that's kind of what's called a systematic exposure, or in the worst case, implosion. What they do is they try to get you past your irrational fear by making yourself expose yourself to this irrational fear, and to find out that nothing's going to happen. He's going to get sick. He's not going to die. He's not going to go in the hospital. Okay. So given that, you can explore this with him and tie it into his faith. Also, tie it into the thinking he's got. I've said this on the show before, that we've created the perfect fear. It's invisible. You can't see it. It's everywhere. And it can go through cloth masks, and it won't stop. Cloth masks will not stop it. It'll go right through them, because it's much, 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 much smaller than the weave of a cloth mask. So look at this. What a fear. But you count on your body. I don't know, Marie.
I don't know that it's as much of a fear for himself, as he's afraid that he will spread it to grandparents or to his future children or something like that. It seems like it's
That's irrational because children are the least susceptible to serious complications from COVID. By far the least. I always tell parents, if you're that afraid of COVID, that kind of risk, do not put your child in a car, because a car has much more chance of doing something to your child. It is the perfect phobia. For most phobias, you can avoid them. If I'm fearful of restaurants or fearful of flying, fearful of driving on the interstate, I can avoid it. It can constrict my life, but I can avoid it. How do you avoid something that's invisible? How do you avoid something that is in the air all around you, everywhere? The stuff that's within our atmosphere that you breathe in all the time. Your body's designed. The best defense against these kinds of things is having a healthy body immune system. Decent enough vitamin D, not extremely overweight, no smoking, getting some exercise, eating right, not the standard American diet. All these things are huge factors in keeping your body healthy and well. So what we did was, in the response to COVID, is we created this environmental fear for so many people. And it was done so very well, too. I mean, come on. Media just kept saying, these are all the folks that died. But they never told you that if you were 30 years old, your odds of dying of COVID were very, very small, 99.9-something. But they just simply said, it's out there and it's going to get you. I shared with you once earlier in the program, I was talking to my uncle. And he's older. And he said to me, I said, Uncle Rich, you think that COVID will kill you? He goes, oh yeah, if you get it, you die. I said, where did you hear that? Well, it was on the news. Uncle Rich, you realize that your age, if you do get COVID, you have about a 6% chance of dying. No. Yeah, that's the statistics. Elderly at most at risk, and it's about 6%. Oh, no, I just thought if you got it, you died. Well, you see, if you think like that, and I think he reflects a lot of what the mindset was for some people. If you think like that, oh my gosh, of course you're going to be terrified. Now, the other thing is that there's something called medical student's disease, and it sounds like Marie's son had a bit of medical student's disease. In his nurse training, he read a lot about diseases and disorders. And it's like going to the internet. If you go to the internet and you read a particular disorder, you get scared. It's like, oh no, look at what that thing can do to your kidneys. Look what it can do to your head. Oh my gosh, people lost hearing because of it. You panic. And so what happens is, tongue in cheek, medical student disease afflicts first, second year medical students because they read all about these things. And their body's quirks and jerks that are normal, they could interpret as, does that indicate something serious? Is that something I should keep an eye on? I thought that was just kind of a headache, but maybe where it's located, it might indicate something a little more neurologically troublesome. And it sounds like that was a factor in this young man's fears. Now, the other thing, he said, I'm afraid of giving it to my grandparents. I believe we have to let the grandparents choose. In other words, if the grandparents say, and I will tell you just informally, of the older parents that I've talked to, grandparents, I want to see my grandkids. I want them to visit me. I'm not going to live in fear. That's their attitude. They've made that decision. That's what they choose. So if he says, I'm not going to go there because I could give it to my grandparents. Well, first of all, now the evidence has come out that the asymptomatic transmission, they were afraid of that initially, but now they're realizing if you have symptoms, just don't go near somebody. Stay away. And funny, they reduced it from 10 days to 5 days too. So they're feeling their way along, or they were feeling their way along. And I think that this young man has just not kept up with what has come to light through ongoing research and looking at the whole picture. Oh, gosh. Okay, I better take a break because I am past break.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
Many Catholics, and this is what I had to learn because I was challenged early on when I came back to the church by very solid, Protestants who knew the scripture very well. Well, why do you believe this? You know, and I wasn't able to in the beginning to explain it from scripture. And that really was a great catalyst for me. And then I discovered EWTN and Catholic Answers Live, and I'm talking almost 30 years ago. And I became addicted to apologetics, and so I was able to understand it from not only a church teaching perspective, but obviously a scriptural perspective. And I think this is a good lesson, I think, for all of us. Not that we have to be, you know, a mini Carl Keating or something or a Scott Hahn, but that we should have a basic understanding of the faith enough to be able to confidently respond when someone who's on that journey is asking us questions.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Live truth. Live Catholic with trusted series, features, and specials from EWTN Home Video. The EWTN Home Video highlight for July is the Blessed is the Nation Rosary for America and Rosary for Life DVD special. This unique collector rosary from Gorelli features a special crucifix with red and blue enamel stars and stripes on the front and One Nation Under God on the back. Also included is the Rosary for Life program led by Father Joseph Mary Wolfe with special meditations for the protection of all human life.
We remember that God is the Father of all and that He loves each one born and preborn with a Father's love.
Order your Rosary DVD set at EWTNRC.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
Dr. Ray here, final 3 minutes. Just a postscript on why some people became so afraid. Australia, their Northern Territory, back in January, officially imposed a lockdown on citizens who have not been fully vaccinated. Now, again, there's research that has come out. This came out from, I think, Johns Hopkins, where they looked at all this and they said lockdowns make no difference in the spread. That makes sense because you're closed in. It says here, they imposed fully vaccinated. Anybody not fully vaccinated? Now, I know what fully vaccinated means. Is that four? Is that four of the shots? Against COVID-19, this was back when the Omicron variant was coming out back in January, which was the vast majority of the infections and was much milder than Delta. Much milder. It says here, any individual 16 or older who was not fully vaccinated will not be able to leave their homes until the middle of next week. Now, this came out in January, till the middle of next week. Even if it's to go to work or to get exercise outdoors. Article goes on to say the country is confronting an epidemic of sudden adult death syndrome. Syndrome is striking down healthy and active people in Australia, and the doctors are baffled. I don't have time to go any further than that. Let me give you a C.S. Lewis here. This was the quote that I put at the very front of my Jesus, the Master Psychologist book. The Christian and the materialist, in other words, the person who believes there is nothing but just the universe, hold different beliefs about the universe. They can't both be right. The one who is wrong will act in a way which simply doesn't fit the real universe. That's right. If there's more to this than just what is in the universe, there's nothing beyond, nothing metaphysical, nothing supernatural. Consequently, with the best of intentions, the best will in the world, He will be helping his fellow creatures to their destruction. Do we not see that now? As secularism takes over and God is just pushed away, and the rates of all kinds of human misery and violence and social aggression are skyrocketing. Well, if there is a God, and as secularism says, no, 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 we can do this ourselves, we don't need any God to look toward to guide our morality, things get real ugly. That's what Lewis says, with the best will in the world, because these are folks who think they're doing what is good by getting rid of this religion. He will be helping his fellow creatures to their destruction. That was written by C.S. Lewis in 1946. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In on this Look Back Friday. Andrew Krucek for all of the editing you do with the calls there. And you are a valued associate of this program. Walk with God. Be not afraid in your walk with God.